All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. Are you looking for a strategy to overcome high interest rates and actually have your deals cash flow? On today's episode, we're going to talk about a very specific creative financing strategy that combines subject to and rent to own.
We are interviewing Jen Delafave. She is a real estate investor who have built a portfolio using this strategy in multiple states. You're going to learn real life examples on how to evaluate a deal, a seller, so you don't waste time analyzing deals that would never make sense. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andrea Segadelli. So Jen, creative financing strategies, it seems to be a game changer, especially when supplies are down and interest rates are up. Why do you think so many investors are not taking advantage of this strategy?
I think that it could be overwhelming and maybe even a little scary to think about taking over a seller's mortgage payment. I know that I was feeling that way before we got started and got the proper education. But once we started implementing this, I realized it was a heck of a lot easier than going to the banks and now definitely not having to get those high interest rates.
So it's funny that you're saying this because a lot of investors are not so familiar. There are so many different strategies when it comes down to creative financing. So on this episode, we're going to break down two of them, subject to and rent to own. So we start dissecting this elephant. So I think that there is a lack of knowledge on the investing side and also on the buyer side, right? The person that is selling the property. So there's two types of education that needs to happen. So we're going to start with the investor piece of it, and then we can move on. How have you educated the sellers? So when it comes down to subject to, let's define what that is and what that is not.
Yeah, well, let's definitely start with it is not assuming a loan. So I'm not getting my credit checked. I'm not taking over, you know, I am definitely taking over the interest rate, but I'm not having to go to the bank to run my own credit or any of that. And so subject to is simply taking over the seller's mortgage payment subject to its existing loan. And so it really is as simple as it sounds. There are definitely lots of paperwork involved. You definitely need to have a really great team in place, attorneys and title companies and all of that. But it really is a great strategy to be able to take over an interest rate that is lower than what you can find right now.
And it makes so much sense, Jen, why as an investor, right, the person who's acquiring the property would want that, especially with interest rates being high. And there's obviously, I want to dive into the risks. Let's talk about that now before I get into the next piece. What are the risks as the investor in doing that particular strategy?
Yeah. So, I mean, we technically buy on a wraparound mortgage, which is just creating a promissory note, wrapping it all up. So it's a little different than subject to, and it protects the seller a little bit more because at the end of the day, you're taking over the seller's mortgage payment, which is tied to their credit. So you have to be extremely ethical and morally responsible to be able to make those payments on their behalf on time every single month. And we've been able to raise sellers' credit scores because we were able to do that when they were starting to get behind. And so it's really, I think, important to do that. Now, if an investor can't pay, we have it all in the paperwork where the seller would then get the house back, deed it right back to them, and you know they could foreclose on you. But it's all in the paperwork too. So that's why we really prefer the wraparound mortgage versus the subject to. But again, similar.
So what are the major objections when you're presenting that to a seller? It sounds that is a no-brainer, is a win-win, but what do you hear them saying?
Yeah, well, I think it just comes down to you have to have the conversation. So they're going to tell you their pain or why they're even trying to sell in the first place. And so a lot of it might be they may be uncomfortable with you taking over their loan. And, you know, we provide social media background on us and kind of let them see other seller testimonials. But there has to be that know, like, and trust factor, because there's definitely going to be a long relationship, especially if you do take over a long term. That could be another thing for a seller. They might not want to be tied to this property too long. So we always try to get a long term in place to be able to cash them out eventually down the road. But that could be something. And it doesn't work for everybody, but there are plenty of situations where sellers are in need of selling quickly and they want full price for their property. And by purchasing this way, we're able to do that.
Talk to me about the length of expectations, because, you know, some investors, they get so much anxiety for not purchasing their next property, right? And you just mentioned about trust and sellers and buyers. It takes time to build trust. You don't build trust over text message from one day to another. So let's set the right expectations here. When a deal comes through, is there an average of, okay, this is an average, how long does it take for me to structure, to enroll, and to create a win-win for both of us? What is the average time?
That's a great question. And I think it just depends on their motivation. You know, we kind of have a scale that we've created. So if they're at 8, 9, 10, I mean, we could hop on a phone call and be writing up a contract that day if they're like ready to rock and they have checked us out and they are really truly ready to, you know, sell their property. And then other times it could take a couple weeks, couple months. I've even seen it go like a year or so where, you know, it just time and circumstance plays out and they finally realize like, this is my best option. And it just really depends. It's a case by case basis, but, you know, it's just being able to ask the right questions and figure out what is their motivation level and how can I best help them.
I love the idea of talking about like the avatar, right? Because everyone's got these tools, creative financing tools, and they're not all appropriate for every single seller. So there's a particular type of seller and a particular type of property. I would imagine that this, obviously, I've never done subject to myself, done other creative financing strategies, that this works and it just matches. So they have to be motivated. Talk to us more about like describing the ideal avatar, right?
Like
the
a checkbox. I would like to have a checkbox.
I have a piece of paper out because that's really what this is about, because that's the skill that we want everyone listening to get, right? Is that it's not just about subject to for this particular, you know, seller. It's about a specific one that this will serve. So walk us through kind of like the, you know, A to Z, what does this ideal avatar look like?
Yeah, I'll definitely talk about some of our most recent sellers.
That'd be great. Yeah, use examples.
Yes, examples. Absolutely. So I had a family reach out, I believe it was springtime, and they were in upstate New York area, East Chatham, and a gorgeous property. They had only bought the house 2 years ago. So that like really is a huge flag, like, hey, we just bought this property and now we're moving. And they said they wanted to move to Florida and they did not want to time it in the market. They didn't want to get the house market ready. They were just like, we're packing up and we're leaving. And they did. So we were able to help them out. They did need a little bit of moving money. So a little bit of a down payment to them. And then, you know, for them, they were signing everything down here from Florida with mobile notaries. And just knowing that we were the buyers and they were truly taken care of. It was a push the easy button and yeah, kind of set it and forget it on their end. They just had to take care of some paperwork. We wired them the money and, you know, took over their payments and started making the payments on their behalf. And then we placed our tenant buyer and we do all that stuff. But it seems to be anyone who's just bought a property, they have low equity. So most people are looking for high equity, right? But we're able to go after, not go after, but help people out with the low equity and really let them know that we can help them pay full price, because sometimes if they go to list it, they're going to maybe even have to come out of pocket and pay those closing costs. So the way we purchase, we cover all closing costs, theirs and ours, and we just buy it as is. And I couldn't believe how many people get so excited over that factor, which brings me to my next example. A family down here in Florida over in Edgewater, it's like New Smyrna Beach, east coast of Florida, gorgeous house built in 2022. They had a job transfer. So he's already over in Texas, the husband, and the wife and kids are home in this house. And he's like, I got to get this thing sold. I can't make these two mortgage payments. And so we're able to inherit his 4.25% interest rate. So it cash flows, which is insane these days, right? It's really difficult to find a cash flowing property, especially here in Florida. And again, he left the house as is. So we had to spend about, I think, $500 to clean it out. But it was such a perk for him to literally leave his cable box. He didn't even remember to return that, because when you're in a frenzy and moving and all of that. So, you know, it's really just the ease and convenience. They're ready to just move on. There's not a ton of equity. You know, it's not that they're in even a financial distress. It's just more of like a, you know, I'm ready to just move on.
Particular situation. That's really helpful. Quick closing, low equity, and they haven't lived in the house too long.
Yeah.
I want to emphasize a word that you said. It's like, they reach out to us. I like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Versus us having to spend a lot of time reaching out to them. And I'm sure you also reach out to them. But I want to break down a little bit of your marketing strategies that you're using right now in order to attract the leads, because that is sweet. When they reach out to you and you're just returning their call and you already have information about their situation, their property, and you're providing a solution for their needs. So open the doors behind the scene about how you're able to start attracting those leads.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite things. And it really started changing for us. It was 2019. I had heard a gentleman talking about social media marketing. And I just love social media. You find the best people there. I can connect really well, just hopping on a phone call or, you know, even through video. It's amazing. And so he talked about running sponsored ads on Facebook. And so if you are looking to scale, or if you're looking to get, you know, a property more often than not, you know, sometimes you have to spend a little bit of money in marketing. So we do run sponsored ads on Facebook. And really, it's just a post with me holding a sign saying pay full price for your house, or it's a photo of a disheveled property or what have you. But you're just running an ad, and then they will comment on your posts, or they will hit the button, connect more. And then from there, we just send messages back and forth. So you're kind of in the DMs and you're just messaging 10 questions that we have for our opening script. We just kind of go through and ask simple questions like, why are you selling? Tell us more about the property. How much do you owe on your mortgage? And they'll tell us. So now that we have all this information, you can tell the lead motivation. And then from there, you can hop on a phone call with those who are truly ready to take those next steps. So you're not just sitting there, you know, with people who are kind of, oh, I just want to see what my house is worth, because that can be a lot. And honestly, there's also free methods on Facebook that I just want to share with your audience too, because I know marketing can really get expensive, but we found this really amazing way. If you were to figure out where you want to invest. So for me, I still love upstate New York, Rochester, Buffalo, all the surrounding towns. You go and you join those Facebook groups. And these are not real estate groups. These are simply community
like town,
groups.
Community. Yeah.
Mom groups. And we just put a post in there. Does anyone have a house for sale that's not market ready? I'm looking to buy one in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And I'm telling you, you will get direct messages, you will get comments, you will get some interesting comments too. It's social media. But I mean, I know so many people that they've purchased businesses this way, they found their own home this way, you know, multifamilies. So there are people sitting on the other side of our phones. We just have to be posting actively and consistently.
Ooh, I like that. I'm getting some ideas. and I think that's so smart, because then you're able to really get involved in the actual community that you're looking to do more business. Do you then share? I'm curious, when you're doing that, especially like in New York, do you then share, hey, I just closed on this property, and just so you can start to have some street cred or some, I don't know, that especially if you want to keep buying in that area, you're not just looking to take, or hey, does anybody want to sell their house? Like, you're actually sharing, hey, I just did this project, or just adding value in some way. Do you do that or no?
Absolutely. Yeah. So an extension of that, especially if you're running sponsored ads, you need to have a Facebook business page that's active. I mean, you have to be posting on there. So if you've got people that you've bought their house and they're super happy with you, get them to take a little video and tell, you know, how you help them. You could have them leave you reviews. And then, of course, if you yourself can walk the property or even hop on and go live, it just gives you so much know, like, and trust. You're able to build that credibility. And that's kind of going back to why a seller, they could do a deal with us in a day, because I've got all this backlog. Now, when we first started, it was, you know, a little bit more, but you know, as time goes on, you have a free Facebook page and you can use your personal profile too, but you have to tell everybody what you're up to and what you're doing. And you never know who's on your page might sincerely be in a jam and could use your help. And that's really what helped me, because I know it's very much a mindset piece. Like, oh, I don't want to post. Like, I don't want people to know my business. But I kind of had to get over that because I realized how many sellers were in situations that they were embarrassed about or they didn't know how to fix. And if I don't put myself out there, then I could be missing out the potential of helping someone else.
Yeah, that's always so important. The time frame for these contracts was subject to, and then we want to move to the back end of how you do the rent to own, which we want to talk about. But what is the typical time frame that you like to set it up? Is it a year, 2 years, 3 years? What is your actual, you know, is there a preference for you in terms of how long these contracts should go with the sellers?
So as far as our term length, how long I can take over their property, I mean, I would love to take over the length of the loan. Those are my favorite.
Just so the actual length of the whole loan. Gotcha.
Yeah. And so that's a conversation between us and the seller. So we'll just ask them, you know, typically I've got some folks that will give me 15, 30 years, you know, the length of the loan. That doesn't work for everybody. Sometimes we do 7 to 10, you know, Mr. Seller, what's the most time you could give me before I cash out? And they'll tell you. And so, you know, as far as our goal, we don't want anything less than a 5 to 7 year term because we need time to get our rent to own buyers cashed out. And also the market fluctuates. So I want to make sure that, you know, if appreciation, like I've got some time there that I'm not trying to figure that out.
So Jen, time, right? We just talked about the length of the loan, but I think a lot of investors waste a lot of time on a deal or on a seller that don't qualify, meaning they are not motivated. You mentioned a couple of minutes before about this scale that you have. Talk to us a little bit more, because it seems that helps you to qualify the seller if you should spend more time or not.
Yeah. And, you know, question number two that we always ask is, why are you selling? And if they're telling me that they've moved out of the house already and it's vacant, like to me, that's like, you know, this person's going to the top of my pile and I'm going to make sure that I'm following up with them. I'm helping them. I'm trying to close this deal. But if someone's kind of, you know, wishy-washy, well, we're thinking about moving, or I'm just really not sure. And well, my neighbor's house just sold for, you know, this crazy amount, or they're just asking like way too much down. They're asking for way too much purchase price. I mean, I can pay a good price for the property, but I'm not going to overpay. And so sometimes too, that I'm not telling you my address, like right there, that is not a motivated seller.
So I'm not telling you what state I live in.
So how do they want you to evaluate their house?
Exactly. That's the point. So like you get, I mean, especially when you run ads or however you market, you're going to get some Mr. Grumpy Pants, and it's just try to do your best. But if you're like dragging them through the questions, they're not motivated. Like the tens, the nines, like they are answering every question. They're maybe even writing you back paragraphs and they are just ready to go. And so when you spend the most of your time with the smallest amount of leads, which are going to be highly motivated, then you won't feel so defeated, because I see so often that people do spend too much time trying to build this rapport with someone who has no intention of selling. And that was us. Trust me, we would go to properties. We would spend hours. You know, we knew everything about the neighborhood and the dogs and the cats. And that lady was never going to sell us her house. So we've learned through our mistakes, and hopefully others can too, you know, really focus on your questions at hand. And can you help them? Are they wanting to be helped, really? And you know, see what you can do.
Got it. When you're going through the analysis, so you identify, right, the quick closing, low equity, somebody who's motivated, they live there a short amount of time. You're like, this is qualified. You get on the phone, you're like, you know, check, 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 check. Now you're assessing on the back end, you're going to do a rent to own. So what are the other things that you're evaluating at that point? I'm sure you're evaluating the rental income. So walk us through that part of the decision making as well.
Yeah. So as far as rent to own, there's tons of different ways people do it. I feel like the way we do it is best. I don't know, I might be biased, but we've actually helped 6 different families become homeowners at this point. So I think that's incredible. But when you're looking at it, you know, it has to cash flow as a long-term rental. So you're going to have to pull the comps in the area. You want to see like what apartment complexes are going, what are other single family homes in the area renting for. And we want a cash flow. And so it is true. There are sellers that will say, take my house. And especially here in Florida, if the interest rate's already too high, it doesn't cash flow. Like we can't buy the house. It doesn't make sense for us to lose money every single month on a property. So you really have to take a look at, you know, is the purchase price in line? Like, you're not totally overpaying for it. It's fair for everybody. And that the cash flow is happening, you know, ideally 300 to 400 minimum is what I would be looking for after you have new insurance on the property and, you know, you're taking care of the mortgage payment. Because our tenant buyers take care of everything else, the utilities and all of that. But I think that's probably the most important thing. And then again, the length of time. If my seller's going to give me 6 months or 2 years, then that's not going to work for me.
And let's break down the benefits of rent to own versus the long term. I understand that you're running the numbers just in case if the rent to own something happened, you're running the numbers on long term rental. But why have you decided to pair up subject to at the as your acquisition strategy and then rent to own as your exit strategy?
So many reasons. So we had 5 properties and we realized that we weren't really cash flowing. This was back in 2016, I think we were at, and we were kind of like, what, like we thought this was going to like help him leave his full-time car dealership job. And we had this vision. And by the time maintenance and repairs kicked in and we had Bird, so that was, you know, what it was. So there just was no cash flow. And then the calls were getting a little out of hand, you know, just the already at 5 properties. And we knew if we put a property management in place. So we discovered rent to own. And what we loved is you really get paid 3 ways. And then also you're helping people own the house. And I think a lot of people think, well, I don't want to lose a door. And I get that. But if I explain this, maybe it will make a little more sense why we love it so much. So when I offer a property rent to own, I am looking for somebody that has a lot of money for a non-refundable option deposit. I want close to around that 10% of the purchase price. So we're getting $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 of non-refundable money that will go toward the purchase price when they execute that option to buy. And then every single month, we're going to cash flow because they're taking care of all of the maintenance and repairs. So if something goes, that's on them because they're technically homeowners in training is kind of how I look at it. And then since they're renting until they're able to buy, it's all in our paperwork. So I still control the deed. It's just they're in rental phase here. When they do go and qualify for that mortgage and they cash us out, we make that spread from what we bought it for and then what we're selling it to them for, because those are going to be 2 different prices. So now that I get this big back end check, which usually is almost 6 figures, I can go invest this in a bunch of more doors. So it's kind of like a Ferris wheel, like people get on, people get off, and then you're high-fiving because these people just became homeowners, and that's a really cool feeling.
It sounds great, right? And you are proving, not doesn't sound great, but you're live proof that it is a great strategy. What are the risks? What went wrong? We want to know. The disasters, the thing that, you know, hit the fan and you're like, whoa, that was a great lesson. Tell us about those so the women are super aware and know how to avoid that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, people are people. So in a perfect world, I have those who pay rent on time and then they buy out and all, life is great.
You know, oh, no, Jen, we only have great tenants.
Right. So there are people who stop paying you after they've given you $20,000.
Right.
So, yeah. And you're like, how is that possible? It's so much skin in the game.
Yeah.
So life happens. And so, you know, you'll have to maybe go through the eviction process, which whatever it looks like, we do it in New York and it is not a fun process. But, you know, at the end of the day, that is a non-refundable option. Again, if you have all your paperwork done properly, then, you know, you should be totally fine to be able to move on. I've also had weird situations where a gentleman just moved out. Like after 5 years, I got an email in March and he says, I just want to let you know I moved out of the property and the key is on the gate. And we were like, what? And so we sent our contractor over. And of course, the house is a total disaster. He was growing marijuana in the house. There was just like a bunch of couches. Like it was a scene, right? So we spent probably $20,000 to fix it up. But then the nice part was we just put in a new tenant buyer who was going through a divorce. So her credit was bad, but she had money from a recent sale. She paid us $31,000 for her non-refundable option and like 6 months of rent. So now this woman is so excited. She was like mapping out her garden in the backyard and we're able to help her. But it was a little, you know, oh man, like now we got to fix it up again. But with this strategy, I knew I had money coming in from another tenant buyer that would help me, you know, build up that reserve again. So it does, you know, things do go sideways. You always have to make sure that you have, you know, game plan ABC. And worst case, you could have sold it on the market. It's one of the hottest zip codes in, I think, the United States. So always have, you know, different plays in your playbook.
You have to have that. So I'm curious, though, from a long-term rental perspective and wanting to own real estate and not sell real estate, we know that that's the most important thing, quote unquote. But this strategy is really about creating that win, you know, six figures, you said, so that you could deploy that in other ways. Why wouldn't you want to just rent and hold these properties and build up a single family home portfolio, if you will?
Most people, I mean, unless you push them, they just kind of, it's like a set it and forget it. So even if I try to say, hey, connect with my mortgage guy, like, I don't know, some people just kind of get complacent. They just want to rent. So I've had plenty of people just, they're still renting it out. So it's not like this big rush. I've had a couple of houses turned over, I think, three times. It's not like I've lost my whole portfolio. We're at 30 doors, I think, right now. And so if anything, I keep adding more to them because, yeah.
I think that, you know, you would think that somebody that is doing a rent to own will take much more care of the property and feel good about living there with intention to buy. The six people that you helped that went from renters to owners, do they have like similar characteristics, goals, or because I want to figure out like what is the sweet spot for the renters?
I think some of them just had that desire to own the home. The first couple that we helped out, two ladies, they were in the house maybe a year and they were like, we are going to own this. We are going to do anything. It was right before COVID happened too. And I don't know, you just can't get mad about losing a door when you're really like, people are that excited about owning their property. And so those people were just, they were very determined. And then there was one property, a big, beautiful property we had. It had a 2-point-something interest rate and we were sad to see it go, but the city was just kind of like breathing down our neck of, if you're going to rent this out, you have to put in this and you have to do that. And so that would have cost us thousands. So we kind of pushed them along in the process and made sure they could qualify because I didn't want to go dump all this money to this property or make these people do it either. So it was kind of, you know, different situations kind of arose for that. But, you know, if anything, the families that we helped, they were just ready to own. They didn't want to be renters anymore and their credit had been fixed and they were just ready to go.
Love that. Jen, for those listening that want to take some, you know, micro action steps, we always call like micro or small steps moving forward because subject to rent to own, there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle, right? That they need to figure out, but we don't want them to figure it out on their own. So what are those first couple of steps, even if it is reaching out, you know, to people who have done this, been there, what would you recommend to everyone listening? It's like, I really want to get involved in this strategy and I need to like educate myself even more or just start taking some first steps. What would you suggest to them? What would you recommend?
Yeah, immerse yourself in the content of those who are actually doing it and doing the things correctly. I think that that's really important. There is a lot out there. So you have to kind of weed through like who's doing things currently in 2024 or whatever year you're listening to this in. And so I think that's been a really eye-opener too, is there's a lot of people who talk on social, but they don't actually do it. And so you just got to be careful who you're listening to and what you're reading. And then, I mean, for me, it was hiring a mentor and then just taking that messy, massive action and being able to just, you know that I was going to take a step, but somebody was there to just help me out that next step of the way. And again, having the right paperwork is always really important and the right attorneys and title companies, just so you're protected, your seller is protected and your tenant buyer knows what they're getting into.
And I think I also say to people, right, because they study a lot, they listen to podcasts, they read books, they might have a mentor, but if they don't put themselves out there, and guess what? You're going to mess up the conversation with people. That's going to happen. And you're going to kick yourself like, but I don't know everything, especially the women that are listening. Okay. You want to know all the answers, right? Before you even call the person. Right. So I encourage you to take a deep breath and you're going to learn as you go along. But it's a waste of time if you listen to this podcast and gather all the knowledge that you need and you don't take action. right? Because you don't want to make a mistake or you don't want to look foolish. Who cares? Go ahead and practice. Otherwise, you're just getting busy to get busy so you can feel good about it. So go feel bad about it when you have to have something and feel good when you close the first deal. Jen, I was reading your bio and you're selling jewelry and vitamins from your house, right? So you're already, some people say, oh, but that's not my background. Well, it's not Jen's background. What was the mindset shift for you, Jen?
Well, I was an English teacher, so it was really not my background. When I started off, I went and did all the right things, you know, went to college and all of that. And then I stayed home with my babies. That was my dream. But I wanted something more just for me. So I got into selling the jewelry and vitamins, you know, get healthy, all of that. And my husband was like, you know, if you focus on real estate, it makes you a little more than jewelry and vitamins. I was like, all right, I guess you're right. And so that's when I had those aha moments of shifting, like how much I love social media. And that, again, using that as a tool, everything I learned in the basically MLM, I was kind of like, oh, well, like just talk to the sellers this way and connect with tenant buyers on this platform. And again, I stopped making it about me and truly it was helping others. And like you said, I threw myself into it. I didn't know what I was doing when I was talking to rent to own buyers and trying to screen them and put them in the right house. And, you know, I was scared. I would pick up the phone shaking and I would just do it anyway. You know, tier two, it felt really silly after a call, but you know, that's how we learn. And then you look back and you're like, dang, I did that, you know, and I didn't have, you know, a whole community back then. I feel like now we're spoiled with, you know, everything you guys have built and all these platforms online. Like there's no excuse nowadays. Like you have so many shoulders to lean on.
And with 30 doors, Jen, what's the one thing you're working on right now for yourself in terms of where your mindset has been and where you want to go? What is that one thing you're working on now?
Yeah, great question. I'm currently reading Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. And I feel like as we've grown a team, I'm really working on my leadership because you realize, believe it or not, ladies, you cannot do everything yourself.
What?
I know, right? Oh my gosh. And I'm a stubborn Leo. I don't know. It took me too long to learn that there are other people that are way better at some of these things that I don't even like doing. So why am I? So now I'm trying to not micromanage. I'm working on my leadership ability to trust that it's going to get done. And 80% is better than me doing it.
Oh. I love that. And it's always working on something new, right? As we get to different levels. Jen, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on our show. Where can everyone listening learn more about you?
Yeah, come hang out with me on Instagram. I love that platform. Jen Delafave, just my first and last name. And I share up-to-date real life stories. I'm a homeschool mom, sometimes a hot mess express, and sometimes I'm dialed up like this because it's content day. But I just love connecting and just sharing that anything is possible. We moved from New York to Florida, and I just want to inspire others that you can live out your dreams. And real estate is a fantastic way to do that.
Jen, thank you. Thank you so much for coming to our podcast, sharing your story and all those great strategies that all the investors, if you're listening, you got to try this out. Thanks so much, Jen.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Jen.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.